You're listening to Peerless Industry Radio, your source for educational content on the cutting edge of industrial process solutions. Today, we will be continuing our discussion on improving supply chain relationships, covering how to initiate change in your interactions. I'm James Lamb, your host for today, and joining us will be David McKendry and Rue Patel.
How would, with those mutually beneficial relationships, how would a customer or supplier approach the steps to establishing something that's kind of outside the box of what their traditional interactions would look like?
So, you know, I think from our perspective, and in a lot of cases, we were the customer in this thing, is we'd figure out, like, where are we spending money? And the initial reaction would be, let's go negotiate a better rate. I mean, that's natural. That's happened for years. And in today's day where cost is key, that's the easiest place to go. Man, if that part just cost me 19 cents instead of 23 cents, and I'm buying a million of them, I'm going to save some money. It's just a simple equation, right? So it just takes a little bit to step back and say, you know, can we really do things better? Because next year I'm going to want 3 cents more. And the year after I'm going to want 2 cents more. And there's no part left after a while, right? So, and there's no business left for my customers. So now I got to find somebody else who can do that. And you can bet inherently things like quality and service and performance and stuff just are going to suffer because we've given our supplier no choice but to do that. So, you know, really took this this example of Corrugate. It was a big spend for us, and said, can we try something different that's not in the norm, that's not a catalog process, you know, at our big company? And the cardboard manufacturer is a Fortune 500 company as well. And so it was one of those things where we just said, can we just do it and try it for 6 months and see what happens? So we worked to kind of put some ground rules in place. So no conversation about the piece rate was part of that. Exchanging people, operator exchanges and visits was a part of that. Developing one central master list was a part of that. You know, reporting out function on a monthly basis where both parties reported back locally as opposed to in a corporate level was part of that. And then created a work list. And, you know, through having things like employee exchanges, you know, we saw a lot of things that we just didn't know about. And so it moves it from being transactional. Now, I'll tell you, it takes a while, right? Because this thing starts with a base of mistrust because it's transactional. And you got to get it to where people will say, yeah, I'm not sure I buy in, but I'll give it a shot.
Sure.
And because you're the customer and ask for that, you can give it a shot. Or if there's a supplier that has earned the right by doing tens of millions of dollars with the, even locally, you know, they certainly can say, we've got a better idea or a better way. And I'd listen for sure. And then we kind of built a team, and I got a guy who, you know, had some great skills to lead that team. And it's interesting. People ask me, like, well, did you put like your CI black belt on that team? It's like, oh, no, I put a guy who was a great trust builder and a great communicator as my leader for that team. So people are like, whoa. I said, if he needed a CI person coming in, a black belt, we'd call a black belt in. And if we needed a materials expert, we'd call a materials expert. And if we needed a logistics person, we'd do that. But I want the team to be built upon great communication, common objectives, and trust. And so that's the leader we put in place. So very non-traditional in terms of our approach to it, and certainly outside the book of org structures, right? And then we kind of got going. My job was to support them and really, quite frankly, to stay out of the way and help these guys. You know, I need a trip for three operators to go to Dallas and, you know, look at the label manufacturer and see if we can kind of find a better way. And I just have to trust that and say, you know, be good about it and take them. Let's go. And then bring their people in and let's go and let's talk about it. So it is very different from, you know, your normal day-to-day work and corporate behavior for sure.
So Rue, I have a question that I'm going to start with. How do I find this person that is your trust builder?
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that I'm not there in front of him every day, I want to find him. He's the guy that I want to get to. What do I need to do to get in front of them so we can say, listen, we're not just like everybody else. This is our bag of tricks. And we have to be respectful. We may not bring the bag of tricks he needs,
right?
But that conversation could be a spark that could turn into something really valuable. And boy, it's so hard to find that guy.
It really is. Yeah. And I think it starts with the ability for, you know, whoever you're in a transactional relationship with, it's with some sort of scale and you're selling belts, for example, right? And you figure out, well, who's my customer? Is it an engineer? Is it a maintenance manager? You know, who's the, once you get through sourcing, who's the actual user? And grabbing coffee with them and saying, hey, how are our belts doing? Are we doing what we need? Do we need to do something different for you to make these things more? Can we take a look at what the application is? And can we just walk? And through those conversations, get to, okay, so we're helping you with this belt issue. And notice I use the word help in there, right?
Yeah.
What's keeping you up at night? I mean, what stuff in this plant's driving you crazy? And I'm not saying we can help, but maybe we can. But let's create that dialogue. And so you're looking for someone with, you know, really good communication skills and good interpersonal skills and someone who can casual this thing down from being a transactional, you know, customer service type thing to looking like help. And it's a word that you used early, Dave, and you hear me use looking like help a lot, but how can I help? And there is magic to say they've got an issue around a control system that's not in your wheelhouse. But maybe you know a controls person or a company that can help them. But directing traffic to help them with somebody that isn't going to end up on your bottom line looks like help. You can expect after four or five of these conversations, when they've got an issue, well, who are they calling? Well, they're calling your guy because he looks like help. Right? He may not have the answers, but he'll help find the answers that helps them become successful. And that's a big part of how this thing shows up.
To me, this discussion today isn't going to bring us to it, I don't believe, but the way to get to that trust, I think, James, you asked about it earlier, like how do you identify people that you want to engage with at that level? You know, what are the criteria? What's the measuring stick? If we're not going to just use a quote for parts, what is the qualification process that gets someone into that space to be trusted, even if they don't have the ability to deliver with their own capability, but there's someone that you will know that they're going to tell you that's the case and they're going to share with you potentially another option that is a referral, right? But that conversation is what I feel like needs to happen way more often in industry. It's too difficult. So much time is wasted comparing the wrong thing. If we find a way to measure the value, what you're looking for as a customer and what I'm capable of delivering as a supplier, and then that precedes everything else. And then you're able to say, now let's talk about, because real, one of the things we say internally all the time is you can come in and ask a guy who you've just met that you've done a nice job giving them a good first impression to say, tell me about, you know, what problems you're having. If you can make your worst, you know, situation in your facility go away, what would it be? There's still going to be some trust there for them to share that with you.
Sure.
You know, the guy just walking in off the street is not going to get the clear answer, right?
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think, you know, an approach we used was, let's look at our top 8 or 9 big spends. And when we chose to use packaging materials because it wouldn't impact like our product quality that, you know, mom and kids ate at the dinner table, right? So this was purely an experiment. And we said, hey, you know, this corrugate thing is our biggest spend, but I'll give you an example of even a smaller spend where we were a small part of some big company and they didn't have to pay attention to us. So we, you know, we bought labels for frosting tubs. And you know, as you can imagine, we go through a lot of labels and they're something like that big, right? And you basically wrap them around a tub, you glue them. But every time one of those fails, for whatever reason, the interface fails, a label fails, a tub fails, you know, causes this downtime. And what that downtime creates is, you know, our operators go through some pain. They got to get their hands in a machine, which is always an injury risk, right? It's a safety risk. And they got to go do stuff maybe 3 times an hour, 4 times an hour, sometimes 10 times an hour. It becomes a pain. Well, after a while, these people get numb to their pain and they stop complaining about it, right? So we were able to establish that this thing was really a bottleneck for us. And it created all kinds of issues, quality issues, employee safety issues, morale issues that we said, if we can fix this label thing, it's going to be better. So we brought our label maker and they'd never been in before and we'd never met them. So it took a while to establish trust and intent with these guys. Because they were based in Dallas and they just sold labels to everybody. And we might have, our business might have been a side project for them. We were not, certainly not their biggest customer by a long shot. So we built a little team and they said, hey, you know what? You know, in this case, we're the small fry in terms of that business, and really worked on, like, they saw some of these stops and failures and they're like, oh, we do that? Well, yeah, you might have Joe get hurt because of your performance. Well, no one wants that. So you find the thing that appeals to them, and you're building trust through walking around and talking and being mutual about it. And you're also building trust by staying true to your word about, I'm not going to talk about unit cost. I mean, that's not why you're here. I'm not going to beat you up as a supplier. But we also found ways that these guys looked at and says, well, if you set your equipment up differently, we'd run a whole lot more efficiently, and let's help you with that. Now, they're not the equipment people. They're just the label people. So yeah. They helped us, and our employees got super excited. We sent some folks down to Dallas over the course of a year. And the results of this thing, and it starts with getting the right person in role and building trust. No injuries from an operator standpoint. So we could have just banked it from there and said, you know, we kept our employees safe because this thing got better and the machine didn't stop as much. Well, the machine stopped. We measured by mean time between failure. We improved that by 60%. 60%, right? We didn't spend any money on this thing except for lunches, meetings, a few flights and that sort of stuff, but a lot of dialogue. We invested time but didn't spend money. Reduced our rejects, our quality rejects by 75% on that system, and reduced our label spend by 9%. So there's an example very clearly of, we spent less money, but it wasn't margin decretive for them to sell labels. Mm-hmm. They became a more valuable partner for us. As a matter of fact, they were the General Mills Supplier of the Year that year. And obviously that buys a little prestige and a little bit of trust, but they could flaunt that with the rest of their customers to be recognized by Fortune 5 house.
Sure.
And there were some weird things, like you just realize when you talk to these people and kind of open up the walls. So for example, we have recipes in the back of these labels, which neither of you guys knew about. And quite frankly, I've been in that building for 15 years and didn't know about. And they said the process for us to put that recipe on there, to print it, to make sure the glue application is right, so it peels off right without tearing the recipe, blah, 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 cost us a lot of time and inefficiency in our system. So we went to marketing and said, what's this about? And no one there could answer because someone slapped it on there 15, 20, 30 years ago. And most of our marketers didn't know we had a recipe in the back of this thing, right? And so just these conversations would never have come up in a transactional relationship. Got rid of the recipe. That's how they were not margin decretive. It made their process simpler, got us a better label out of it. And it's like, why aren't we talking more? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Like, why aren't we talking more?
It's funny because this exact same thing, or you know, the example happened to us just yesterday, where another customer in that private label space, we're preparing for an audit. And one thing I was going to mention, when we've built the best rapport with the customers who started out as just a supplier-customer relationship and it turned into a collaboration, a lot of times the trigger point for the next level is an audit. So when we can, I think, James, one of the things we had talked about potentially bringing up is the idea, how does the relationship improve? I mean, what are some of the things we do as a supplier? What do? Well, we invite audits. We want an audit. When I first started, an audit was a panic attack. Like, we did not want any customers coming in our building, right? Today, we can't wait. Like, if you want to have an audit, please. That's the beginning of the next great phase of our relationship. But to my point, I guess, going back to the example, we had a situation where there was a testing procedure being done to a product. There was some complexities where there were multiple pressure ranges. There was a heightened pressure test requirement on something that was actually, you know, relatively, it's a level that you prefer not to have to test to, just based on safety factors. And through all of the dialogue about something, there was a documentation error, and we were going back and forth through a non-conformance resolution, it was identified that 15 years ago, the originator of the specification for the test pulled the wrong data.
Oh.
And established this much higher pressure, which we'd been performing, and it really wasn't a cost thing. But for all of us, it became like, I can't believe we've been doing this for 15 years the wrong way. I mean, it wasn't a problem. It was a higher than pressure. So it was proofing it at a higher rate. But by lowering the pressure, it improved safety, and it became a singular pressure rating as opposed to multiple tiered. So the ability to manage that going forward became so much easier. Mm-hmm. But that discovery was like, I can't believe we've been doing it this way all these years, and no one knew it wasn't the right thing to do. So just like the label, people get into a habit. Initially, they feel that discomfort, and then they just get used to it. And next thing you know, it's just the way they do it. Mm-hmm. But the ability to try to foster an environment and culture where change is just part of that culture is a huge, huge initiative, I think, in industry in general. And those companies that thrive, those companies we envy, whether they're competitors or they're customers or suppliers, they're almost always the ones that are constantly moving forward and innovating, and that their people are very pliable and fluid and willing and able to try new things. And that, again, organizationally, that's who we're looking for. Doesn't have to be that they're already there, but that they want to be, whether it's someone we do business with as a manufacturer whose product we're going to sell, or a customer who's saying, you know what, we realize we got to do this differently. We can't keep doing it the same way anymore. But the minute you walk into a place and they say, that's the way we've always done it, and that's how we're going to keep doing it. Because you know what, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, you got to be able to open up to that next tier of understanding before you start finding ingredients on the back of a label that 50 million people have never looked at, right? Or, you know, testing that's been going on for 15 years that never needed to happen for someone to say, wait a minute, you know. But it was the dialogue that happened for us to all be questioning something that got us there.
Well, thank you, Rue, and thank you, David, for joining us today. It's been a very interesting conversation, and there's been a lot to think about for our listeners. So that concludes today's episode of Peerless Industry Radio. Hope you spark some thoughts for you on the potentials of supply chain relationships that you may have not considered. Rue or David, do you have anything that you'd like to close with?
Yeah, I'll just say it's a privilege for me to work with you on this, James, and with you, Dave. Dave and I, we've known each other for many, many years, and I think in the last maybe 6 months, we've kind of built this thing up a little bit bigger in terms of our ability to, you know, share ideas and communicate and learn from each other. So I'm in certainly a better place for it. I'm not a podcast dude. This is maybe three or four that I've done. But James, great job directing traffic and getting it. But I appreciate just the conversation that we've had is awesome.
I appreciate you being here today.
I agree, James. Well done. And